Support for Iditapod, a production of Alaska Public Media, comes from MVFCU. Experience the MVFCU way.
Would you consider this emergence, the emergence of a pattern, bringing people together in a beam of light and energy to focus charitable giving on individual targets like a laser beam?
Count us in, maybe.
Welcome to the Iditapod, a podcast about, this time, wrapping up loose ends. I'm your host, Casey Grove. We are a production of Alaska Public Media and KNOM Radio in Nome. Before we dwell on this a little too long, here's a word from our sponsor.
Support for Iditapod comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities.
And welcome to a special Red Lantern edition of the Iditapod. Today, we're going to round out our coverage of the 2019 Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race and mention some of the final developments that have happened in the 2 weeks since our last podcast. I am joined in the studio by Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes and gun for hire mercenary KNOM reporter Ben Matheson. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey, Zach.
Remind us, Zach, what does your voice sound like so that people know who's speaking?
I sound like this.
Hello, I have a little bit of a cold, so I don't sound like my normal self, but this is more or less what I sound like.
Ben, remind us what your voice sounds like and why.
My voice sounds like this. I got over my kennel cough a week ago, so there's very little left of that.
Yeah, that kennel cough going around. Like I said, like I said, we're looking at wrapping up the 2019 Iditarod. I have been loosely referring to this as the epilogue. I think there's some maybe minor corrections we could make and a couple stories that haven't been told on the Iditapod that came out as the race was ending. Mushers were still coming into Nome and further developments, let's say. There were a total of 39 mushers to finish out of 52 that started.
Which I think is significant because we had a story earlier in the Iditapod about how exceptionally late it was for anyone to scratch. I think it was, by the time people were taking their 24s when we started getting news of the first scratch. That's a big share, though, for 13 people to scratch any year, and especially in a field this small. That's a pretty sizable group. And it wasn't in any one place. There were some early on. There's a lot around Caltag and Unalakleet towards the coastal sections of the trail, but it was spread out a lot.
Zach, you had talked to Bruce Lee with the Iditarod about this at that time. Where was that interview again?
We spoke in Takotna, and right as we were speaking, Shani Traska was scratching in Nikolai. But still, that's pretty far into the race. I think that was about Tuesday when that was happening.
It did end up being a pretty tough race all around.
One other thing that I just want to mention about how people finish that is that the top 20 was really spread out this year. I mean, I didn't crunch the numbers, but Ben and I were in Nome, and there were these long intervals between when the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth people were coming in. I mean, usually it's stacked pretty close together, but this year it felt really elongated in between people.
And, of course, the entire pack gets very stretched out from the first place finisher all the way back to the last place finisher. We call that the Red Lantern. Who was that this year?
The Red Lantern this year is Victoria Hardwick. She's a rookie musher who's mushing out of Bethel, just like the champion Pete Kaiser. And it was a big celebration for the YK Delta to have both the first place finisher and the Red Lantern this year.
And actually, Victoria Hardwick came in after the mushers banquet had concluded. So there was not even officially a Red Lantern this year at the banquet because there were still mushers or musher on the trail. And she arrived on Monday following. So definitely an elongated back of the pack this year, too.
Ben, you mentioned, that she was one of the five YK mushers in the race this year. Let's talk real quick about just how all of them did. Pete Kaiser won. You had Richie Deal, I think, 11th place.
He came in 11th place. That was another big celebration when he came in. He's been hitting that top 10 range the last few years.
Jessica Klaika?
Jessica Klaika, the rookie musher, finished in 31st position this year.
I think she was the highest finishing female rookie in the race this year, if I remember correctly. Nicholas Wickstrand is one of the 13 that scratched, right?
Yep, he scratched at the Caltech checkpoint this year.
And then, of course, we just said Red Lantern, Victoria Hardwick, also mushing out of the YK Delta. Now, to explain who won Rookie of the Year kind of takes a little bit of a telling. Richie Beattie was actually the first rookie to make it to Nome. But then what happened?
Not immediately there, but he had sent a dog out, and there was not any major health concern. But while in the care of veterinarians, I think about 2 days after it had been dropped, a 5-year-old female named Oshi died from complications arising from pneumonia. And because there was a rule change to Rule 42 in the Iditarod, any musher who loses a dog is then disqualified from the race. So even though Richie Beattie had arrived, he'd finished. He'd finished as far as he knew with a dog team in good standing, minus the dropped dogs that he'd had. He was ultimately disqualified, and so Ed Hopkins, the next rookie in, who's about an hour behind him, was ultimately awarded the Rookie of the Year award. And at the musher banquet, Ed Hopkins addressed this and the kind of awkward feeling that he had accepting this award.
I feel pretty uncomfortable being here right now. I hate gaining on somebody else's misfortune. And I always thought through hard work and perseverance, you pretty much get your just reward. So in saying that, I'm going to accept this on Richie Beattie's behalf. A little to Richie.
Zach, it's a little tough to hear, but what is he saying there?
He's saying, I don't like to benefit from other people's losses or misfortune, and I'm going to recognize Richie as the rightful recipient of this award. And I believe he gave the money that comes with that award to him.
What other awards did they hand out at the Mushers Banquet?
One of the most prized awards is the Leonard Sepulla Humanitarian Award. That's the award given by veterinarians for their choice of a musher who had exemplary dog care. And Allie Zirkle won that award this year. Not the first time that she's won it. She gets free entry to the 2020 race.
The Sportsmanship Award went to Mats Pettersson for helping Linwood Fiedler recover his dog team along the trail. It was a story that we had about a carabiner breaking and Linwood's dogs getting away from the sled. Yeah. And Mats Pettersson helping him track it down. So for that, he was recognized.
And we can all laugh about, you know, just sort of the amazing, like, survival of this team. But, you know, at the time, Linwood was on, you know, Iditarod Insider just bawling his eyes out, you know, because he was so scared. I mean, he was really still in the moment having just found the dogs. But when I saw, you know, that he even finished the race, and definitely was impressed by that. What other crazy things were happening that we haven't discussed yet?
One of the stories that caught my attention had to do with Sarah Stokey, who has finished the race before. She shares a kennel with her husband, Travis Beals, who was, I think, number 5 in. And Stokey had to walk her dogs for the last part of the race. I am not totally sure how long. She references 150 miles that she had to be the lead dog of her own team. I don't think that means she was walking in front of them the whole time, but I did hear a trail sweep who told me that for the last 15 miles, which along the trail is up and over the Topcock Hills going into Nome, a pretty dramatic section of the trail, she was just out in front of her team walking through the snow. And I pulled a little bit of the tape from her finish in an Iditarod Insider video. So let's take a listen to that.
My team was real happy the whole time, but nobody wanted to go up front. So that was just a real humbling and eye-opening experience for me. But we persevered.
And when she's walking into the race chute, she was literally, you know, you can see in the video her just sort of walking out beside her lead dog and out in front a little bit, just traipsing in. And man, I just can't imagine, even on a good day, never mind having run already like 2 weeks, 1,000 miles, but just marching a dog team through the snow for 13, like that's some old school mushing right there.
Just gotta get there. Yeah. So Sarah Stokey finding a way to march to the finish, even leading her own team. That's one of the stories that we definitely would have been guilty of omission if we had left out of the Iditapod. Another one is the I Give a Rod, hashtag I Give a Rod, which raised a ton of money. The last time we talked about it was with Quince Mountain. I think the interview itself was even a couple days old by the time it posted. We might have mentioned $20,000 that had been raised at that point. Where are we now with hashtag I Give a Rod?
At last check, before coming down to the studio, the I Give a Rod had raised almost $112,000 for schools in Alaska. What started out as a way to get some fourth graders from Nikolai into Anchorage for their school trip, they surpassed that total, and then it just started going to other schools, so to Katna, and an effort to get new furniture. And as far as I can tell after that, it turned into just fundraising and to GoFundMes for teachers and schools all across Alaska. So there were Anchorage schools, Nome schools, I think Emonic or St. Mary's was on there, places that are not on the actual Iditarod. And there was the spontaneous outpouring of philanthropy to schools all across Alaska. And I was blown away by the whole thing. Ben, were you impressed by the Google Sheets performance of the Iditarod?
I thought the level of self-organization was particularly impressive to bring together money from people from all across the country and probably all around the world to a number of different places in Alaska and beyond was truly impressive.
So hashtag Iditarod, very closely associated with hashtag ugly dogs. One last thing I don't want to go unmentioned.
Wait,
on the
where's Quince? Part.
We don't know. That's another loose end we are not going to be able to wrap up, actually.
I checked the Twitter thread to see if there's any vague clues, but nothing.
Maybe we're just, it's probably just the wrong day. We probably just didn't reach out on the right
time. I hope he's just sleeping.
Yeah.
I hope all the mushers and everybody that's snowmachined the trail is just sleeping.
Just on a big pile of straw with like some nice warm spring sun coming down.
Mm. Yeah, no camel cough. Don't want to forget to mention, I did have a goatee for a brief period of time because I was like in solidarity with you guys out there on the trail. I didn't shave.
He looked like a broke Mitch Seavey. Yeah.
Young, broke. Zach, now that we've run through a few of our loose ends, would you like to introduce today's next segment?
I would. We're going to do a one-time recurring segment. It recurs today, three times.
First anniversary.
It's our first anniversary. We're going to borrow a game from our friends on the NPR Politics podcast called Can't Let It Go. I came up with this because I thought it was a good way to just get through our favorite things from the trail.
Well, and to be clear, you didn't come up with anything. You stole it from someone else.
I came up with the idea of stealing a conceit from another podcast. Yeah. So okay. I'm taking credit for stealing it. Yes.
Okay. Good call.
And I wanted to do two. One was Can't Let It Go from the race, things that happened in the race that we're really stuck on. And then Can't Let Go of Tales from the Trail. So what were things that happened to you guys during the Iditarod? The whole experience. It doesn't have to be race related, but that you're really stuck on. So since I did the hard work of coming up with this idea, Ben, you have to go first.
What I can't let go is how close the finish was between champion Pete Kaiser and second place Your Life, Seth Olsom. That was 12 minutes over a 1,000-mile race, and Your Life, Seth Olsom made up 28 minutes over the last 22 miles coming in from safety. So at that finish line, there was a big party, but no one was relaxed. If anyone was watching GPS, no one was relaxed until Pete Kaiser popped up on Front Street.
Where does that rank in terms of closest finishes?
It was the fifth closest finish in history.
Zach, what can't you let go of?
I don't know if it's technically a race thing, but at the Takatna checkpoint, there's a ton of teams that park there, and basically this whole section of town just turns into a dog lot. And so every time teams leave or come in, there's a little bit of a commotion. And as your Olsen was getting ready to leave, his team was parked right next to Mats Pettersson's team. And almost like they were saying goodbye, Mats's team just started howling at Yor's team as they were getting ready. And then dogs all over Takatna, basically, all over the dog lot, just started chiming in. And it was a little dog choral ode that I want to just play really quickly.
The call of the wild. I need to go. I hear my wild calling.
When I think about that, I just think of the dogs just saying, like, we are descended from wolves. What about you, Casey? What can't you let go of?
There was this woman, and we've talked about this already, but she was way back at the ceremonial start. To explain, I spent a lot of this Iditarod locked in a dungeon that is shaped and looks a lot like a recording studio, but it's where I spent a lot of time So I didn't get out as much as you guys. I was out in the wilderness.
I was going to say, I didn't see you in Anvik at all.
Yeah, I didn't make it to Anvik or anywhere outside of Anchorage. But when I did get out, it was for the ceremonial start. And the one thing that sticks with me that I cannot let go, this woman, Eleanor Frank, who is a huge fan of Lance Mackey and the Mackey family in general. And she was there on the side of the trail, just real close from a neighborhood that I had just recently lived in. She walked down from her place and was there with his favorite beer, a Milwaukee's Best, which I will talk about in another moment. But she has her Mackey sweatshirt on, and I saw her, you know, and it just kind of like gave me deja vu to see the same person in the same exact spot. And it turns out she's been going there for a long time. So I felt pretty comfortable approaching her, and here's that interaction.
Because I've seen you here many times. My name's Casey. I work for public radio. And you've been coming to the spot for a long time, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been coming here since 2004.
Wow, yeah.
Same spot, 2004, yes.
And I think I know the answer to this, but who is your favorite musher?
Yeah, I'll show you. Oh, if I can.
Sorry to put you on the spot.
Oh, here he is, Lance Mackey.
Looking forward to seeing him this year?
Yep, I even have his beer for him.
What kind of beer?
What?
What kind of beer is it?
Milwaukee's Best.
Yeah, I remember being here one time and he stopped. I don't know how many years it was ago that he stopped and you had your sweatshirt on and did that whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
Why do you like Lance Mackey?
Because I started out with his father, Dick Mackey. Way back in 71, 72, when the Iditarod first started. And then after that, I followed his older brother, Rick. And then I followed him, and now Jason. Well, Jason's not racing this year.
But yeah. You're a Mackey fan in general.
Yes, ever since day one of the Iditarod.
And maybe you kind of said this already, but just to ask you again, why do you pick this spot to come to?
Because, you know, here you feel like you're part of the race because look at this, all woods, and you can get up close to the mushers, you can high-five them, and downtown it's too crowded, too noisy. Here this is more like a home atmosphere.
I keep thinking back to that clip just because it's a casual fan who the only thing she really has to do to participate sort of in this race is to walk down the street with a Milwaukee's Best for her favorite musher, and maybe she gets a hug from the guy, and I'm sure he remembers her, you know, 14, what did she say? She's been going there for 15 years. So, you know, it's just kind of this cute little thing, I guess, you know. I had spent a lot of time sort of doing the very difficult work of interviewing partiers and hanging out with a bunch of people having fun. And here's this like one, you know, solitary lady with sort of, in a way, holding that Milwaukee's Best, like carrying the torch for Lance Mackey, who maybe ran his last Iditarod this year, we don't know. She'll probably be rooting for whatever Mackey is next in the race, or multiple Mackeys.
That reminds me of two things. One, I forgot to mention, Lance Mackey got the most inspirational musher award at the banquet. It's voted on by the other mushers. Two, your Can't Let It Go reminds me of my second Can't Let It Go, which is another trail handoff. This one happened in Unalakleet, and my friend Carl, who we stay with when we're in Unalakleet, Carl Erickson, we had snow machined up the Unalakleet River to a friend's camp. We were hanging out there, had a fire going, and we're going to watch the mushers go by. And three of them, Pete Kaiser, Jesse Royer, and Yor Olsen, were all pretty tightly bunched up. We saw them go by, and Carl raced on a snow machine a little bit down the trail, and then ran up to Yor as he was passing.
Go on a slow progress.
Way to go,
Yor. Let's go. Yeah, it's 3 years running. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Yeah, we'll see. We'll do it again next year. Awesome.
So we're 5 miles outside of town. There's really competitive mushers going by, and still you can just walk right up to the trail and hand a bag of sweets to somebody. And I asked Carl, you know, after all this had kind of wound down, I went over and I asked, what did you give to him?
What did you hand to Yor?
Canterbury, Swedish, cinnamon roll in Swedish, Norwegian.
And every year you've done it?
For the last 3 years I've done it, yeah. Found him on the trail and given him some fresh Canterbury.
Have you had to do it that dramatically where you snow machine back?
No, the first time was by accident, just happened to, and it's like, oh, by the way, I have some. You want some? Sure.
So I like that it's the wholesome version of giving Lance Mackey a Milwaukee's Best in Anchorage is you know, at like a camp 5 miles outside of Unalakleet, giving somebody Norwegian Swedish cinnamon rolls.
Wholesome, wholesome.
Wholesome, wholesome.
Ben, do you have a, is there something else gripping you or that you are gripping and cannot possibly let go of?
Got a few of these. One more quick Lance anecdote. When we were in Unalakleet, it was upper 20s, lower 30s. No one's got hats. No one's got gloves on except Lance Mackey, who's wearing polar bear mittens to protect his hands. His hands just don't stay warm. And he was wearing these giant polar bear mittens while he was trying to take off booties, trying to feed his dogs. And it's no wonder that he was voted most inspirational for some of the many challenges that he has to overcome to finish this race.
Guys, we didn't put a question in. What are we going to do about that?
I would just give a heartfelt goodbye.
I can't.
Do you want me to give the heartfelt goodbye?
Casey usually needs to prank call his wife or like former reporters.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be anything big. It would just, you know, it's...
Okay. Guys, this is it. This is the last episode of the I Did It Pod. It's been a blast this year. We definitely talked about a lot of things in that final episode from the race. We're calling this one an epilogue. But any last thoughts before we all have to run out of here?
I just want to say thank you to everyone that listened, to everyone that submitted questions, and to the people who found the I Did It Pod compelling enough that they donated to Alaska Public Media. And thank you to you for all the work you did in your little dungeon cave while we got to be out in the fun and the sun.
Likewise. Ben?
Thank you, Zach, for establishing the theme fun and friendship, which is a theme that I've decided to take far beyond this podcast and use it as the only criteria for anything I do in life, whether it fits fun and friendship. So to everyone who's listened, supported, and otherwise been part of this, it's been the absolute highlight of my year.
Yeah. Thanks for coming along, everybody. It's Alaska Public Media, Zachariah Hughes, Ben Matheson for KNOM Radio in Nome. I'm your host of the I Did It Pod, Casey Grove. And I guess, you know, I just want to say, too, you know, thanks for coming along and in the spirit of fun and friendship. We're all fun and we're all friends. Our theme music, it's usually by the band Sassafras. This time I am told it's by No Bunny. That's what Zach says. He's nodding his head. I got that right. Good job. We're not going to see you again on the Edit Pod. Not for a while, anyway. But, you know, until next time, happy trails. Just kidding. We are back with another addendum to this final episode of the I Did It Pod. We had our epilogue. Let's call this the author's notes, shall we?
I think we should stick with coda.
Coda. I like that. Yes, a coda. And Zach, I want us to introduce ourselves yet again because...
Not doing it.
Okay. It's...
Not doing it. They should know by now.
Okay. It's Zach Hughes, Casey Grove in the studio.
And we don't have Ben here because it's actually a few days after we recorded the last thing with him, and we didn't want to trouble him. So we just came back in and we're going to cover some things that we forgot to mention the first time around and just handle them bim, bam, bop, boop, beep, boop, boop.
Bim, bam, bop.
Boop, boop. But we thought they were important enough that we couldn't just drop them and forget about them. So, Casey, what did we forget?
Yes. Some of the things that we can't let go of are just things that we actually forgot to mention. And that's what we're here to do, is to wrap up the last of the last loose ends. The top of my list is Nicolas Petit's response to some criticism in the days and the week or 2 weeks after the race. He did some interviews and had received some criticism of folks on Twitter and elsewhere, you know, sort of saying that he had maybe run his dogs into the ground and that's why they quit when they got to the sea ice. I think, you know, like a lot of things, it's somewhere in between. Nick had said that they had had a bad memory of the previous year when they got lost on the trail and ended up, you know, finishing second when they probably could have won the race, and maybe some bad vibes from that that the dogs remembered. And then, of course, people are pointing to these long runs before he hit the sea ice where he was trying to build a big, big lead to stay out in front of the Iditarod. that ended up backfiring and that it was that. What's your take on that?
I don't know if I have a take. I mean, whatever happened is between Nick and his dogs. And as everybody was scrambling to figure out and make sense of his position on the GPS tracker freezing in place after being in the lead for much of the race up to that point, I think there was some information that came out through the PR firm that handles a lot of the Iditarod's news releases. There was some stuff that was said about the dogs quitting or protesting or Nick yelling at them. And I don't really know what's what. I know that Nick's fullest statement and accounting of it came in some of the days afterwards in a lengthy interview with the Iditarod Insider, where he talked about the team having stopping and it not being an issue of fatigue that kept them from going and kept them bedded down for a long time, but that it was more a mental obstacle, like you mentioned, from the previous year in that same stretch of sea ice heading from Shaktulik to Koyuk. And I don't know. I mean, I think some of that is face saving on Nick's part, a way of saying that he pushed his team, but they were not exhausted, that this was within the sort of responsible strategic gamble that he was taking. Since then, he's tried to launch a fundraising effort to get some money to run his dogs across that section of trail.
Yeah, to maybe deal with some past trauma. If that's what it is.
Disabuse them of their hesitations on that section. We'll see what comes of that. I think as we're sort of figuring out a narrative on this big sort of epic maneuver that happened in the middle of the race that allowed Pete Kaiser to pull into the lead and maintain it throughout, I'm not exactly sure what happens, but what we do know is that the dogs didn't want to go any further, and Nick respected them on that and scratched and ended his race.
My main takeaway from this is that we forget sometimes that dogs are dogs. They're complicated, and it's not just like you press the gas pedal down until you run out of gas and you've got to watch the gas gauge. It's way more complicated than that, and it's a dog race, and that's what makes this race unique, really, is that it is run by dogs and humans, but all of them need to be cooperating together and on the same page and feeling good about it to get down the trail.
They are not pistons. They are autonomous pack animals that you have convinced to work for common purpose.
That brings me to another pack, which would be the squids, Squid Acres, Paige Drobny.
You're really reaching for that transition. A pack of squids.
But it is a thing that another thing that we kind of forgot to mention is that Paige Drobny did in fact win the Most Improved Musher Award this year at the banquet.
Yeah, that was one of the awards that we were sort of rattling through and completely forgot. And I thought it was important to mention one because it's a big deal to go from, the 40s in your previous run to seventh place. We had mentioned Paige in the context of three women placing in the top 10 this year, Jesse Royer, Ali Zirkel, Paige Drobny. But also for Paige to have gotten Most Improved Musher, that's a significant award that other mushers pay attention to, even casual race fans pay attention to. So didn't want to forget that.
One person that's not at the top, and just this thing that I cannot let go that is part of the reason we're even here recording, is that we way back, I don't even remember what episode, before the race even started, we're talking about all the international mushers in the race. And we failed to mention Michi Kano. He's from Japan. He mushes out of Willow. I think this maybe is the first time we've even said his name on the Iditapod, so I feel a little bad about that. But I just wanted to mention that he's a person that's out there and is an international musher that we failed to include when we were talking about that before. One other thing I wanted to just wrap up is that in true Iditapod fashion, as soon as we got done recording last time, we did hear back from Quince Mountain, and we still have been unable to record with him on this last edition of the Iditapod. But that's because he's getting ready for the Kobuk 440. That's a big part of it. And then we have our daily schedules now that don't involve just covering the Iditarod. So you're actually going to be going up there more for personal stuff, more for, a trip up to the Arctic. But
I'm turning 30, Casey. Well, I'm turning, and my coping mechanism for turning 30 is to go snow machine in the Arctic. That's all I know what to do. I don't know if I'll see Quince. I hope I do. I feel like anytime you try to make a plan with Quince that revolves around like mushing and the outside and stuff, it's like taking a bumblebee and throwing it at a target and hoping that it hits the bullseye. So we'll see. I really want to find out how Quince has been, how the snow machine ride was, and how his 440 is going if we run into each other.
And I'm sure if you guys end up talking and recording any of that, we'll be hearing about it. But really...
Yeah, but not in a real episode, because this is our last episode.
This really
It'll
is.
Just be a bonus episode.
This really is the last episode, yeah. But we do appreciate everybody reaching out and sharing their appreciation of this. It's been really, it sounds corny, but it's been heartwarming to like hear from people that actually really enjoyed listening to this and listened to every episode, sometimes more than once, and told their friends about it. And, I've just heard from people even recently, just at different gatherings, that I've heard from people that they really liked it. So,
or that their moms liked it.
That's even better.
That's really the best one.
Yeah. I think that actually does maybe wrap things up for us here. Zach, what do you think?
I think it's time for the outro music.
It sure is. I'm your host, Casey Grove, joined in the studio by Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes. No Ben Matheson this time. He had to go back to work. But our theme music is by the band Sassafras. We will be back next season. Thanks for listening. And until then, happy trails.
We're calling it I Give a Pod. Is it I Give a Rod?
Oh, I Give a Rod.
I think both Casey and Zach said I Give a Pod.
That's Sorry. Written down as I Give a Pod.
Sorry.
I'm not smart enough to
I was trying to see like what it is.
This f***ing race is never going to end.
When do we get back to...
That is evil. Can't even say the name right.
Yeah, well, I didn't notice it either. We're the I Give a Pod.
A podcast about what else?
Welcome to the I Give a
Philanthropy.
Pod.
Contributing to your favorite dog-themed public radio podcasts.
Do we have to listen to it? Do we just need to take it all back?
No, I just got to take it back. I can run that back more quickly. It's always back. Better when you take it back.
It's always better.
Let's always, take it back now.
It's always...
So, Sarah Stokey marching to the finish, finding a way to finish this race...
Let's just take it back to the beginning.
A podcast about what else?
God, looking into the darkness of your soul.
The problem is when you look into the darkness looks back at you.
Right.
It's a Lance Mackey quote.